It is 8:30, and you are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. And look what the cat drug in. It is it's a 2-for-1 deal today. It's not only John Parrish, co-editor of Eat the State, columnist with the Seattle Weekly, but it's Maria Tomchik, who is also co-editor at Eat the State.
Hi.
And who we have been trying to drag into this program for about, 5 years?
Yes.
And I think we have finally succeeded. We wore her down, which is not easy to do if you know Maria.
No, we had to actually have a team of black belts help us drag her in here.
And I should throw out to the listeners also, this is not in retaliation for last week. I was sick as a dog last week, and I apologize if I sounded like feces on the air, because that's how I felt, but doing much better, and it's great to have Maria here because she's smarter than I am.
Thank you, Jav.
All right, so I'm glad you got that out there, Jav. I think that was part of the payback too. Just getting those smart shoes. So we got a lot to cover this week, and let's just dive right in, shall we? Couldn't help but notice on the front page of the paper today that apparently the Bush administration has worked up a little nuclear target list that is very upsetting.
Yeah, they basically borrowed a list of members from the United Nations and are just sort of working their way methodically down them. Apparently, no, it's in the Seattle Times this morning for anybody who's interested. There was also a little gem in the PI this morning, and we'll get to that shortly. But at what point are people going to start getting terrified of the Bush administration and of our plans apparently to militarily dominate the globe? This latest thing is a plan that is put out that is a radical departure from past U.S. foreign policy, at least for the last 30 years, in terms of how the U.S. has at least publicly said that and diplomatically said that it will use its nuclear arsenal. Historically, it has been used first and foremost as a deterrent, and it has been targeted against other nuclear powers. The U.S., it's always been very controversial, number one, that the U.S. has never said that it would not use a first strike, and that it would not not fail to use a first, that it would not rule out first strike use, which the Soviet Union always did. The Soviet Union always said that we will only attack if we are attacked first by nuclear weapons. But it was understood that the United States would not target non-nuclear weapons. Well, there's been a lot of talk from various sort of Dr. Strangelovian elected officials and people like Paul Wolfowitz within the Defense Department since the war on terror started, that we should be using nuclear weapons against Afghanistan, against Iraq, et cetera. Well, it turns out that since last summer, at least, the Bush administration has been preparing nuclear targeting against 7 countries. I don't have the list in front of me. I believe it's Russia, China, Iran, Iraq, North Korea. Let's see, that's 5. There's
Syria,
two more.
Syria
and Libya. That was the other two. And you know, there may be more, so far as we know, but it is sure to raise a firestorm of criticism, no pun intended, in the United Nations from some of these targeted countries. And you know, you combine that with the walking away from the ABM treaty, which we have seen Bush do with very little public criticism, and that probably is opening the door for the kind of nuclear proliferation the likes of which the world has never seen. And now Bush administration is giving those countries, and all countries really, motivation to develop those weapons, because they may be targeted also. Anybody may be targeted by the United States, and you know, you would have a hard time answering critics in your own country if you don't start developing weapons like that. It's incredibly reckless, it's incredibly dangerous, and you combine it with the vast expansion that we have seen recently of United States military presence around the globe in places like Yemen and Georgia. We saw a week ago with the firefight that we've seen in Afghanistan, where we see that, strangely enough, just as with September 11th, many people in the world don't like it when, you know, foreigners come from halfway around the globe and wreak destruction on their homeland. There are just any number of different signs that the United States, in addition to operating its foreign policy in a way that in a way that dominates the world economically, is now very much intent on using the September 11th attack as a way to expand its military. You know, the budget that Bush had asked for the Department of Defense alone, not counting the Department of Energy, the NASA, some of the other military programs, is larger than the military expenditures of all other countries in the world combined. I mean, it's just, at what point are people going to be up in arms about this? At what point are we going to start realizing that the reason the federal budget surplus has disappeared is because, A, tax cuts for the rich, B, poor economy, but C, a blank check for military contractors. And at the same time, we're creating enemies all over the world. And this has been the downfall of every empire in the history of the world, has been its arrogance and its assumption that we can control everyone everywhere. It isn't going to work, and people like you and I and the people listening to this program, we've already seen from September 11th that we're considered fair game by a lot of these people at this point. Anybody walking the streets in the United States is now a target, in part because the United States has really been the leading power in the world over the last 50 years that has advocated through itself or through its allies that it arms and trains, targeting civilian populations. I mean, Vietnam was a benchmark for that, but we've been doing it pretty routinely ever since, as have our allies, such as the late and unlamented terrorist Jonas Savimbi, who was our guy, so nobody really talked about the fact that he's a terrorist that killed 1.5 million people in the 80s and 90s. We're aligning ourselves with people like that now in different parts of the world. And the blowback is going to be horrendous. And it is certainly not a way to prevent terrorism. It's certainly not a way to make any of us safer. And the human cost around the world is just breathtaking. And the cost in terms of the degree to which people are going to be willing to hate this country. At what point are people going to get alarmed about this?
Well, of course, when you say that, you're talking about people in this country, because I think the rest of the world is already alarmed.
Yes, exactly. And that's something else that we're not really aware of in this country, is that the opposition to this, not just by the usual peacenik fringes, but by elected officials, by business leaders, by very mainstream folks all over the world are just appalled by what the United States government is doing, and an unelected government at that. And who's going to be pushing the buttons on these things? Is it going to be the shadow government that the Bush administration appointed, or is it going to be the Bush administration that the Supreme Court appointed? I mean, it's just, it has been a very surprisingly quick slide into being a country that really is working both internationally and domestically against almost everything that it's supposed to stand for.
Yeah, in that same vein, just this morning I noticed in the newspaper that that Congress just passed an economic stimulus bill and sent it to Bush's desk to sign. They passed it in quiet. There hasn't been anything in the pages of the paper or on the news or anything about this. They extended workers' unemployment benefits 13 weeks, but at the same time gave $96 billion in tax cuts to businesses.
Yeah, and
so that's a payoff.
I want to get back to that in a little mm-hmm. minute also when we get to some of the business stuff, but mm-hmm. I really, really wonder where the opposition, not just by peace movement folks, which have really not done a very active job or a very competent job in a lot of ways of connecting with the American public over the past 6 months, but elected officials also who are not standing up on this sort of thing, community leaders. It's very frightening, very frightening.
Well, Maria, did you want to jump in?
No, that's fine. But there was another piece today in the paper. I picked up the PI this morning and I looked, and this is a business article. It was buried in the business section. And there's been a lot of talk in the media, and there's been a lot of hearings in Congress over the Enron debacle. But it seems our own homegrown Immunex has a little bit of something to admit to. They had an off-balance sheet transaction, $671 million related to something called a synthetic lease. Now, I looked at that and I said, what the heck is a synthetic lease? Well, it turns out a synthetic lease is one of these little made-up financial deals where you take on debt to build your headquarters, and then you can just wipe it off your balance sheet. You can take the tax breaks related to it. You can pay some of the expenses related to it, but you just don't have to declare that debt on your balance sheet. So it's kind of like going to the bank and saying, can you give me a loan? And oh, by the way, my credit card debt doesn't count for anything. That's not real. So you don't have to take that into account. So that's kind of interesting that, you know, we've known that Enron may have been the seventh biggest company in the nation, and it's failed. But its problems are widespread throughout industry. Everyone does it.
One of the other things that came up, and by the way, one of our other local icons, the people from whom most of us get our local phone service, Quest, is another one of those countries that's playing
companies. They might as well be countries, right?
Yeah, that are playing funny games with their balance sheet. But a couple of very interesting things about Enron that sort of came up this week. The 4,500 Enron employees who were laid off in Houston have gotten a lot of publicity, and it's in some part been sort of a game of diversion where all the different politicians and the media talk about these laid off employees as being the victims of Enron so that we don't focus on the millions of people that are suffering through energy deregulation, paying higher costs,
exactly,
and so forth. But for those 4,500, a couple of interesting things happen. Number one, it amazes me that, I mean, it's not the whole workforce. I think the workforce was, that was probably about quarter of the workforce, I think. But the seventh largest company in the world only had 4,500 employees laid off. I mean, that's, you know, there are sweatshops in Houston that employ more people than that. And, you know, granted that Enron didn't actually make anything, but, I mean, you know, when you're building pyramids and Ponzi schemes like that, you know, the paperwork must be tremendous. I'm not sure what those 4,500 would do.
That's a reflection of how much they bragged up there, how much they inflated what their real net worth was.
Yeah, it's very
true.
They
really weren't the seventh largest company in America.
Not at all.
They just made you think they were.
But, you know, beyond that, there's been this whole phenomenon of sympathy for the workers. And there was an agreement this week between the lawyers for the workers and the bankruptcy judge overseeing Enron's bankruptcy that gets each of the workers $1,100 in severance pay, which, you know, when you consider that these are mostly white-collar professionals, that's less than a week's pay for most people, regardless of their contractual obligations or, you know, what. And the way companies like Enron and their lobbyists have rewritten bankruptcy law over the past few years, that actually is an improvement over what they probably would have gotten, because major creditors get first priority. But beyond that, it's been very, very interesting to notice that there's been a lot of public empathy for the Enron employees, because this is something that a lot of people can relate to, because just as Enron, the scandal of Enron in terms of its accounting practices wasn't so much that they were illegal, it's that they were very common. They just took a little bit of a step further than most, and maybe not even most. But the same thing is true with how it's been treating its employees. You know, anybody in this country who has had a job over the past 10 or 15 years knows about job security, knows about the lack of benefits, knows about stagnant wages, knows about companies that will sacrifice their employees on a whim if it will help the short-term balance sheet. So it's funny that when they were talking about the original economic stimulus plan last fall, Democrats would say, we're saying things like, you know, this is the and the tax cuts for the rich that were embodied within. Democrats were doing a lot of posturing around the unemployment benefits, and Republicans would come back and say that these Democrats are fomenting class war, quote unquote. You know, so now you've got two phenomena. Number one, you've got the economic stimulus package with enormous benefits for the wealthy, as Maria was saying, essentially passing in the dead of the night. You know, at the same time, you've got this phenomenon with the Enron employees. And funny thing, when people are talking about how Enron screws its employees, nobody's using the phrase class war. You know, the Republicans are not saying that when
there's a reason for that, actually.
Yeah, I'll get to that. But, you know, when the Democrats are saying, you know, these people need to be stood up for, the Republicans are not coming back and criticizing them for that. You may have other reasons for them also, but, I think one of the reasons is because you know, when you start introducing vocabulary like that, it's not just the very poor, but even relatively well-paid professionals who, you know, a little light bulb goes off and goes, so that's what they call what's been done to us for the past number of years. I mean, it's very funny how that rhetoric disappears when you're suddenly talking about people who make $50,000 or $60,000 a year. But in fact, that is what happened because our political process is controlled by a plutocracy for whom that's chump change.
Right. And we also, when you look at Enron, a lot of the focus around this issue has been the fact that a lot of companies provide 401k plans for their workers. But the fact is only about half of the working class Americans actually have access to any kind of savings plan at work. And for most people who take part in those savings plans, it's usually the upper one-fifth or two-fifths of people in the wage force. People in the lower one-fifths, you're looking at maybe 10% of those people get a chance to save in a company sponsored savings plan. Most of those people have no savings at all, and a lot are in debt. So you look at Enron, a lot of people care about it, but it's people who make fairly good money who care what's happening in regards to Enron and the way they really took advantage of their workers. When you talk about people across a broad spectrum of the populace, things like, for example, Quest and their problems have a much greater impact, particularly for people here in Washington State. Quest is based in Denver, but they pretty much have a lock on local phone service and local long distance in this state when they bought US West.
And much of the Western US, actually.
Yeah, much of the Western US. And They did, basically, they're going down the Enron road. They did the same thing Enron did. They grew too big, too fast. They bought a lot of local Ma Bells in the last mm-hmm. 2 years, and they're highly leveraged, which means they have a lot of debt.
And they have no cash, which is one reason why the stink came up a few weeks ago over their, you know, selling the customer information, because they need cash
They need the cash.
They're desperate.
Yeah, they have $850 million in debt payments coming due this summer. Right now, they can't pay their expenses. They're drawing on a $4 billion line of credit just to pay the bills. And Moody's, just last week, just a couple of days ago, downgraded their debt to just one level above junk status. So they're really hurting. They're right on the verge of going bankrupt. And we'll see this summer, they probably will do exactly what Enron is doing. But the impact for customers here in Washington State, now Quest already has a really lousy record of customer service, and just about everybody I know has some story to tell me about Quest, but when a company goes bankrupt, it's never good for the customers, because if you think their customer service is lousy now, it's really going to be lousy after they declare Chapter 11 or whatever they decide to do. And that has implications for everybody who owns a phone line, not just Quest workers or people who have access to pension plans and worry about the security of their pension funds. Anybody who has a phone line.
In the same way that the legislation that made Enron possible actually affects a lot more people than Enron's failure mm-hmm. itself did.
Yeah, like energy deregulation impacted us. And there's a reason why your Seattle City Light bill is still high and your rates are going to go higher. And that's because City Light's still paying for energy deregulation. The same thing is happening with Quest. You're going to have real problems with phone service and that sort of thing coming up pretty soon here.
That would seem to be, to me, something that is closer to some a reality check for, let's say, national security. I mean, the phone service, I mean, you look at all the things. You look at residential, you got business, you've got everybody's computers tied into this phone service, this single phone company. I mean, if they go belly up, then you're talking a lot of
Quest,
other people affected.
Quest DSL service has been a particular problem. Quest owes about $3 million, well, actually more than $3 million to Washington State customers for problems with their phone and DSL, mostly their DSL service. So, and Quest just went to the Washington Utilities Commission to try to weasel out of paying that money to people that they owe it to, their customers. And it's because they have no cash.
And you know what a lot of this sounds like? I mean, well, there's a couple things. Number one, privatization and deregulation is going on all over the world. It's certainly happening with all of utilities in this country. And in this country, like most of the rest of the world, the next great big battles are going to be fought over water. But there's a couple of other sort of interesting sidelights to this. when you see this kind of deterioration in service and basic public utilities, you see this sort of growth in income gap and the inability of people in the lower and middle classes. I mean, Maria is absolutely right. People in this country save less than anywhere else in the world. We're taught to be, I mean, it's now patriotic to keep the world economy afloat by spending money that you don't have. people don't save in this country, and they're often one or two paychecks away from disaster if they lose those paychecks and can't find work to replace it with. We haven't gone through any kind of an economic downturn where the safety net has been in the kind of tatters that it is in now. We're losing control over much of our infrastructure. The next sort of obvious step is that it's going to be controlled by transnationals who have no particular allegiance to the United States at all. It's starting to set up where the United States is another colonized third world country, and there's sort of this global network of large corporations and backed by the United States military that for whom everything is good and splendid, and the rest of us sort of get the table scraps, and this is going on all over the world. Because we live lives of relative privilege in this country, I don't think that people see this trend as adding up to the sorts of the sorts of degradations in things that you would expect out of a government, expect out of public funds that you pay your taxes for. I mean, we're missing the corruption. By and large, although now it's illegal. I mean, we call it campaign contributions, but in just about every other respect, the kind of plutocracy that's raiding and looting. Oh, the other thing, of course, in terms of people's savings and their financial security, is that there's all kinds of pressure that continues to try and privatize Social Security. We've already seen the Enron affecting mutual funds and the 401ks and so forth.
Mostly the people who don't have savings plans at work, they're going to have to fall back on Social Security.
Yeah. So all of these different little pools of money that are remaining that corporations cannot use as capital, that they're trying very hard to get their hands on.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
When the decisions are in the hands of people that they basically, purchased office for, maybe frightening is the word of the week. I don't know.
As if they don't have access to enough already.
Yeah. That's always the prime question of capitalism: how much is too much? And the answer in this country is it's never enough.
I was kind of floored by the similarity in the amount that the Enron was it employees that got $1,100.
Yeah.
Severance.
Mm-hmm.
The comparison between that's only $100 difference between what they paid their employees and what the U.S. was paying to the Afghan families of the victims that they killed in Afghanistan. So
I hadn't thought of that.
That's very good.
That's good.
So Enron rates $100 more.
If you're an Enron employee.
In somebody's bar graph. Speaking of what's currently going down, we only got 5 minutes left or thereabouts. Washington State Legislature is poised to make some major decisions here very shortly.
Yeah, today, actually, March 8th is our... 8th or 9th?
It's the 9th.
It's the 9th. Yeah. The legislature is needing to pull together and have the House and the Senate pass compatible versions of bills by today. And one of the bills that we've been talking about quite a bit, of course, that has still been pending is the anti-terrorism legislation that has not been passed yet. The best of all possible worlds is if neither House passes it and the whole things just die. But if they do pass it, the Senate would...
It's an election year. They're likely to want to pass something like that.
Well, they've already, both houses have passed something, and they can now tell their voters that we passed something,
but
it was the other chamber that wouldn't let it go through. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that, although they would love to get it into law too, but it's certainly a good day for a good old-fashioned pick up the phone and call your legislature and tell them that we don't need any more government power. We've already got quite enough. Thank you. Or for any other issue for that matter, the legislative hotline for Olympia, once again, 1-800-562-6000. Friendly operators are standing by, as they are here at KEXP. You'll hear about that shortly. And give them a call, 1-800-562-6000. They can tell you, they can direct you to any of the legislators, either in your district or outside, and tell you who's working on what bills, and you know, take it from there. Tell them what you think.
Yeah, the cost of that phone call is free, and the cost
absolutely free.
If you don't make it, will be phenomenal. So pick up your phone and make the call. All righty. So much to talk about still in a matter of like 3 or 4 minutes. What do you want to tackle?
Lake Forest Park would be
right.
Good.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Here we're talking about articles in the paper today, and buried in a summation of all the local articles.
No, this was Thursday. I think this happened
really?
On Thursday. It didn't happen yesterday.
Well, okay. It was actually... All right. I'm pretty sure it was Friday.
But
paper.
Anyway.
We'll check that. Anyway,
Maybe they
headline,
just got to it late.
Interesting headline for the article. Officer wounds man with sword.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think, based on what's currently been going down in Seattle, that would be, like, on the front page of the main section.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't the officer who had the sword, is what you might think from the headline. It's not a very grammatical headline. But here we have, once again, as with the, you know, by comparison with the U District shooting that everybody except the police and maybe the stranger seems to think was a horrible abuse of police authority, where they killed a guy who was wielding essentially about, you know, maybe depending on who you believe, between a foot and 2 feet weapon, and surrounded by a half dozen police, or a dozen police. I'm sorry. And we talked at the time about how this guy was pointed to by the police as having fled a traffic stop and dragged an officer in his car for a little ways in Georgia, and how that was used by the police to justify the fact that he didn't like police and had an attitude. But you could also take it as, you know, down in Georgia, they don't even, you know, kill a guy who technically is assaulting a police officer. You know, the guy was still alive. Mm-hmm. And here we have, right in our own very own suburb of Lake Forest Park, a fairly similar sounding situation where an officer was confronted with a guy with a sword and, you know, a taser that didn't work. And actually, it was a little more serious than that. He was going to use the taser, and then the guy either showed or pulled out. I don't remember which.
Apparently,
he pulled out what looked like a gun. It turned out to be a BB gun, but it looked like a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, you have split second. You can't
sure.
you can't really assess that. And so he had not only a sword but a gun. And the officer shot 3 times and wounded him. The guy's still alive. He's going to recover. He'll face charges, obviously. He's, you know, he'll be spending some time at taxpayer expense for the next few years, but you know, but he didn't die. And you know, for some reason in Seattle we have to kill people, and you know, and maybe it's that we just don't hear about the people that they don't kill, but the, you know, the ones that they do kill, once again, just because of the track record over recent years, race has to come into it too.
Could be too that the local stink over the current situation in Seattle might have actually influenced the other police forces to start shooting somewhere else besides the middle of the chest.
That's possible. Although I must say that there certainly have been fatal shootings in the suburbs in the past. It's not consistent, but yeah.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time once again, talking with Jav Parrish, co-editor of Eat the State, and Maria Tomchek, who is also co-editor of Eat the State. And Maria, are you going to be regularly joining us?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Very good.
Good. Means people don't have to listen.
Want to get that commitment while you can.
Yeah, exactly.
I want it on the air.
Yeah, where thousands of people can hold you accountable.
You want it
recorded.
Yeah, exactly.
that too. No, so, it's nice that people won't, you know, after 5 years, won't have to listen to me prattle on for 30 minutes without interruption. So
yeah.
It's good.
All right, so tell us, what is Eat the State? Where do we find it?
Eat the State is a wonderful publication that we both edit, as you mentioned, or help edit. There's actually a third, Troy Skills, and who knows, it's hard to imagine getting him in here at 8:30 in the morning, but we might try someday. If he's not in Mexico. And it's a volunteer paper put out in the community every other week at this point. We have expanded. We're now doing 12 pages every other issue. Might go soon to 12 pages every issue. It's looking positive for that. Our newest first 12-page issue is out in the community as we speak at places where you get free newspapers and cafes and bookstores and whatnot around town. You can also find it on the web, www.eatthestate.org. You can subscribe or send donations or love letters at $24 for a year. Not for the love letters, those are free. At P.O. Box 85541, Seattle, Washington, 98145. We have our monthly meeting coming up this Wednesday night at University Baptist Church, 7 o'clock. And if you need more information on any of those things, or if you have a story tip or comments or feedback, whatever, voicemail is area code 206-903-9461.
Very good. So I will be talking to you both next week.
Yes.
We got that down on tape. Yep.
All right.
Twice.
I will see you then. And that's it for us today here on Mind Over Matters. And we'd like to remind you, our listeners, the opinions expressed on Mind Over Matters are those of our guests and or producers and do not necessarily reflect those of KEXP or the University of Washington.